Welcome to the Drill Down. We've got business stories behind stocks on a move. I'm Corey Johnson, and this is episode number 129. Well, just ahead, just how did digital marketing company Criteo avoid the fate of other online media companies as they fight Apple and privacy rules? Plus, iRhythm Technologies got crushed by federal bureaucrats earlier in the year. Now, it's fighting its way back. And we'll look at a company that aims to dominate esports. Engine Media CEO Lou Schwartz and Executive Chairman Tom Rogers join us. Tom, of course, was the former CEO of TiVo. We've got that story and more, but first, it's sponsor time.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. Never miss another critical event or insight ever. With Era, customize your company watch lists and track key events, mentions, filings, and more, all within an easy-to-use, customizable interface. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to the Drill Down podcast on any of your favorite podcast platforms, including iTunes, Spotify, Google Play, Stitcher, iHeart, and TuneIn. But hit that subscribe button to make sure you catch every show.
And the Drill Down is brought to you by Braintrust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Braintrust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's braintrust.com, to learn more.
All right, I'm Corey Johnson. Welcome to the Drill Down. We're going to tell the business stories behind some stocks on the move. And joining me right now, as always, to help me do that, is executive producer Isaac Webster. Isaac?
Corey, what stocks are you drilling down on today?
Well, let's start with Criteo.
Criteo trades under CRTO. Shares have risen 155% in a year, and they really rallied today.
Yeah, big move in Criteo after announcing third quarter earnings. Criteo is an advertising and e-commerce platform. You probably interact with it all the time when you're on the web and just don't know it, because it is a company that's serving you ads and helping to get clicks to e-commerce companies. And they pay to get traffic, and the revenue they got exceeding their traffic acquisition costs was up 13% year over year. And remember, of course, last year, everyone was online because you couldn't go anywhere else. They did $211 million in traffic after acquisition costs, and their gross profits were up 16%. So again, revenue up 13%, profits up 16%. $276 million, and their operating profits, $68 million. Now, interesting, they grew this business substantially. They've got 22,000 clients now. They added about 400 in the quarter, including Lowe's, Walmart Canada, Best Buy, Douglas. Have you used Douglas, Isaac?
I don't know what Douglas is, no.
Yeah, it's a man's name. It's also a business. There's also a fir tree called a Douglas fir tree. In any case, they added all these clients. Some of you may have interacted with these clients and didn't know you were using Criteo, but you were. But to me, the big surprise was the muted response in the changes wrought by Apple's app tracking transparency policy, which you know as ATT. That policy, of course, requires apps to ask users permission before collecting their data. And it's cost social media companies big time. Some estimates over $10 billion just in the most recent quarter. We've been talking about it on the show for weeks now when we got earnings from Facebook and from Snapchat and from Twitter, from Alphabet's YouTube. They all talked about how they were losing revenues because advertisers couldn't track users on iPhones. Snapchat also, you know, particularly got rocked the most in terms of percentage of revenue because so many of their users are on iPhones. So why not Criteo? Well, it seems that they were impacted, but they managed to kind of grow around those impacts from that Apple app transparency tracking, or ATT. Here is their chief financial officer, Sarah Glickman.
As you know, we haven't given any guidance out for 2022, but given this is such a hot topic, we wanted to at least not leave you with a cliffhanger. What we anticipate is that iOS kind of 15 plus will, that's really starting early November. And so there will be an impact of that next year. So I would assume about half the impact relates to the iOS 15 kind of hide my IP type features versus this year, you know, just given that it just began. So we've got three quarters and a half, if you will, left of that. And then for ATT, the rollout's start there in Q2 2021. So we're anticipating probably around another half of that 60 million relating to the ATT. There's a small amount we're expecting for explicit consent, but as you know, that's kind of already hit us for the most part, and our customers continue to focus on strategies to ensure that they continue to protect consumers as well. So for the most part, that's iOS ATT plus iOS 15, and that's our expectation, and that relates primarily to the retargeting business, and of course, retail media has no third-party identifier, so that's all first-party. So that's the way we're thinking about it as of now.
So, it sounds to me like they're not dismissive about it at all, Isaac. They just were managing to be able to grow around it, and that those big changes from Apple are indeed big changes and are going to last for a little while longer.
Corey, what's your next drill down?
Let's look at Mondelez.
Mondelez International trades under MDLZ. Shares gained 14% over the past 12 months. What's new with Mondelez?
Well, again, quarterly earnings, and this is another inflation story. These guys make Oreo cookies and Ritz crackers and, the gum and candy and stuff like that. And interestingly, I thought among other little tidbits, but these are the ones that stick in my brain, gum sales are down. Why are gum sales down? People aren't popping breath mints and gum because people aren't going out as much as they were. They aren't in the office as much. A lot of offices haven't reopened. And so people aren't buying gum. Gum sales are still below 2019, and the company warning that gum and candy sales will not resume. You probably bought a lot of candy this last week, Isaac. Probably got a lot of candy in your house with your little kids on Halloween. Candy sales way below 2019 levels aren't going to come back until next year at the earliest, they think. And of course, costs. Inflation's a big deal to this company. And they said inflation and logistic costs are going to persist into next year. And they said, well, inflation worldwide is bad. The U.S. is particularly bad. So they're going to start jacking prices. So the cost of gum, the cost of candy, the cost of Oreos, the cost of Ritz crackers, those are going up about 6-7% next year. But it raises this question, right? How much can the economy take it? How much can consumers take it? When you raise prices too much, will consumers shy away? Will the volume decrease? So that question, that obvious question, is just how high can you raise the price of gum? That question was put to Luca Zaramella, the CFO of Mondelez International.
Obviously, the question is, how is volume going to react? And what we're seeing at the moment, it is that elasticities are more benign than they have been historically. But we need to see protracted price increases into next year. And we need to see what moving away from some price anchors will do to our consumers. And that's a little bit the question mark at this point. As I said, though, for the totality of the company at this time, I see good revenue momentum going into 22. And I see revenue being on algorithm for next year as well.
So they're hoping that's the right number, that they keep it to single digits. Their customers will keep buying. If they raised it to more than that, that they won't. But that maybe next year, that's all they're going to see. And the U.S. really is where they're seeing most of it.
Hey, Corey, what is your next drill down?
Let's look at iRhythm Technologies.
iRhythm Technologies trades under IRTC. Shares have fallen 45% in a year, but they had a big rally today. What's behind that?
I got Rhythm, of course, is different. That's the George Gershwin tune that, of course, as you know, Isaac, is the basic of so many jazz tunes as well. But you know that.
Oh, yeah. I'm humming it every day.
But iRhythm is different. Uh-huh. It was torture for me as a young guitar player. But nonetheless, iRhythm is a little bit different. It is the leader in heart arrhythmia detection. And its revenues have grown fantastically over the course of the last 6 or 7 years, going from $36 million in 2015 to almost $250,000 in 2020. That's about 600% over 5 years. The company provides a device called the Zio. It's used by about 3 million patients. It's an ambulatory cardiac monitoring device. It can tell when your heartbeat isn't working right. Now, their future profitability got just destroyed thanks to the bureaucrats at Medicare, who decided that the reimbursement was just wrong, that they shouldn't be getting $300 per unit. They should be getting about $100 per unit. And that just crushed this company, their ability to receive money from Medicare falling, and that was such an important part of their business. The mechanics of what happens behind the scenes at Medicare is so incredibly important to medical device companies and to drug companies as well. But the Medicare Administrative Contractor, MAC, for the South Central states is called Novitas. Well, Novitas matters for South Central states, yes, but the diagnostic testing facility for iRhythm is in Houston. So almost all their services for Zio were processed in Houston. And so this change in Medicare just crushed this company this year. That's why the stock collapsed so much. Well, there's a turnaround for this company. Today we get news for the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, is going to change the billing and the payment rates and increase them for final outpatient facility fees for this iRhythm device, the Zio, the Zio AT. And it's just great news for this company. It makes all the difference in the world because that's going to be at least 25% of their customers. But the bigger question might be, why even bother if they know that they're going to be have customers who can't afford the device? Why even try to sell it to them? Why not just get rid of devices that need Medicare reimbursement and only target the kinds of customers who really can pay full ticker price? See what I did there, Isaac? Because it's about heart arrhythmia and I used the word ticker. Did you like that part?
I got it. I was laughing inwardly.
Well, here is the chief financial officer and acting CEO, Doug Devine, at iRhythm.
Most prescribers are prescribing, doing 25% of their prescriptions to that Medicare fee-for-service segment. And if you try to wall that off and say, tell prescribers, we want to service 75% of your prescriptions, but we don't want to service the other 25%. Many prescribers are going to say, I really need a solution for all of my prescriptions, not for 75% of my prescriptions. So we definitely view it as we need to have the right degree of patients, and we're prioritizing keeping our unit growth on track, versus near-term margin structure, because obviously commercial is reimbursing us at a significantly greater level than Medicare at this point in time. But like I said, that is the thinking, is that we are, our approach is we are holding the course on our strategy, holding the course on prioritizing volume growth over the next 15 months and, taking a multi-pronged approach to reimbursement and driving to, get to the right answer on reimbursement over those 15 months with our growth drivers intact.
So they really kept their bets on the table, even though they're struggling with reimbursement from Medicare. And boy, what a smart move that was. Now they got just what they wanted out of Medicare and CMS. They're able to charge what they need to charge for their device. And the bets they put down for the future, maybe this bodes a little bit better for those as well. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk to a really interesting company that is trying to do what has been done in big sports media with esports media. Engine Media's CEO Lou Schwartz and Executive Chairman Tom Rogers, formerly of TiVo, joins us to talk about Engine Media and how they're trying to build and even cobble together the pieces of what they hope will be an esports conglomerate. How do you do that? We'll find out after this.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Brain Trust, a global talent network that matches highly skilled technical freelancers with the world's most reputable brands. Brain Trust has helped clients like Bank of America, Goldman Sachs, Porsche, Under Armour, and more build agile tech teams fast at a fraction of the cost. Visit braintrust.com, that's BRAINTRUST.com, to learn more.
Hi, welcome back to the Drill Down podcast. As promised, we're joined right now by Tom Rogers and Lou Schwartz. Tom, it's been a long time. These are the guys running Engine Media. And Tom, it's been a long time. I think we used to have talk a lot when I was at Bloomberg and you were running TiVo.
I remember those conversations well. They were good ones.
They were good ones. Yeah, that's why we got you on, because your company's a little smaller than the companies we typically have on the Drill Down. But you've got a long history of developing great media companies. Lou, give us a little bit of your background and know why people should be listening to you as well.
Yeah, thanks, Corey. A pleasure to be joining you. So a little bit of background on myself. I started my career as an M&A lawyer. I left in 2000 to start one of the first internet video platform companies, a company called Multicast, that I sold 10 years later. I've stayed sort of in digital media in one form or another, private and public. I was the chief digital officer at WWE, reporting to Vince McMahon for a short period of time, and joined Frankly and helped architect this three-way merger that resulted in Engine Media with Tom. Tom was the chairman of Frankly. And so I've had the pleasure of working with Tom for the last 5 or 6 years.
Yeah, and I've been through the filings and tried to see what you guys are doing, and I don't get it. What, you're pulling together a bunch of different companies to do exactly what, Tom?
Well, that goes right to the core of it, and I wouldn't expect anything but that from you, Corey, so thank you. What Engine Media
what,
is...
utter confusion? Yes, I know you're totally not getting
Corey,
an utter
your name's Corey, so you go right to the core of everything. What Engine Media is a number of businesses under one roof. As Lou said, it's a merger of three different companies. And we provide traditional sports and esports gaming experiences. And along with that, advertising, data, analytics, marketing, and IP that support those gaming experiences. And then we provide those advertising, marketing, data and analytics to third parties as well. So we are really a company that is out there to shape a new way to experience sports, a new way to experience esports, hopefully along the way to substantially improve the business model of each, both of which have some distress in them. And we do that generally around a notion of social, different ways right. to engage people, where our theme is do it in a way that is true to the kind of social experience people want to have.
So, yeah, you bought a social media marketing company, right? That's the other thing that's interesting about this is it doesn't seem like you're building it. You're bolting stuff on and then building it.
Well, it's bolting, but building as we bolt, because these pieces do fit together. What you're referring to is a company that we bought called Sidekick. We already had a business called Stream Hatchet. Stream Hatchet, many refer to as the Nielsen of the esports world. It measures across Twitch, across YouTube gaming, across Facebook gaming, all the esports metrics of who's playing what, how long they're playing, the kinds of things that the big time video game publishers rely on to assess their own competitiveness. And along the way, it measures influencers, the people that really bring in users in those gaming platforms, and not just the top 10 influencers. We go thousands of influencers deep. So influencers are today the critical new step in digital marketing, particularly as you start hearing about Shopify and TikTok and social yeah. commerce. So we took a step further. We acquired another business, Sidekick, and Sidekick measures influencer communities in the social media world, not the live streaming platform world where our gaming business already measured, but in Facebook, in Twitter, in TikTok, in Instagram. And now we can provide brands a 360-degree view of the influencer world across live streaming and across social media, so you can really assess the best way to have a digital marketing plan that is dependent on social media and the people that really resonate in social media, influencers as they relate to the particular areas a brand most cares about.
So that plug and play for gaming. The advertiser, yeah.
Absolutely. And it relates to gaming in a big way, because gaming, of course, is the biggest topic, area, pursuit in the live streaming world. And it's really where young men have gone. They've deserted yeah. traditional television, which we used to talk about all the time, how TiVo was changing the landscape, how we brought Netflix and Amazon to the television set. Well, streaming television is lighting up a lot of the world, but young men are deserting television for video gaming and esports. And so figuring out a way to bring brands to connect to that audience is a huge part of where gaming and the media world meet.
Lou Schwartz, is there a lot left over? There's a lot of meat left on the bone if after Twitch?
I mean, you know, Twitch sort of dominates that sector, and with YouTube important as well.
Yeah, I mean, clearly, you know, Twitch is sort of the leader in aggregating, you know, live streamers. But there are other platforms, you know, that make up sort of the balance of market share. YouTube, you know, occupies a big sort of segment of the market. Facebook, in Asia Pac, Huya, you know, we're measuring 18 to 20 different platforms, and then providing sort of an abstracted view of gaming across all the platforms. Clearly, Twitch makes up sort of the largest percentage of that segment, but you know, YouTube and Facebook are close behind.
But there's a key issue there, Corey, and that is esports today is largely an industry supported by advertising and sponsorship revenue.
Yeah.
You have 400 million people around the world watching games on Twitch and the other platforms, and there are a number of Asian platforms as well that we measure. But they're basically monetized through the sale of advertising. Now, that reminds me of cable television in the early days, where it had massive viewership, but it hadn't figured out a dual revenue stream yet that really came up with the model that was going to monetize it and ultimately make cable the best business model in the world. What we are bringing to the table with esports is a way to take that and expand it into direct-to-consumer fees, to begin to have games for the viewers of esports to predict what's going to happen in the esports matches that they're watching, so that there is a form of direct-to-consumer revenue through entry fees. These are games of skill, not gambling. So we can begin to have a dual revenue stream esports industry of advertising and direct-to-consumer fees. Similarly, with traditional sports...
Wait, sorry, let me back up. Sorry, direct-to-consumer fees. I don't get it. What do you mean?
Charging the consumer directly and getting fees from them for participating in games that allow them to play along as viewers of esports as opposed to competitors of esports. And as they're watching, predicting what's going on in an esports match, getting questions, what's going to happen next, how's it going to play out. The more knowledgeable you are about an esport game, the more able you are going to be to accumulate the highest points. And those entry fees that you pay get paid back out to the winners of who are viewers of those games. And we think there's an enormous opportunity to create direct-to-consumer fees to support the esport model, which, again, is an advertising-based one today. And we have a similar thought when it comes to traditional sports. Traditional sports, as you know, has been underpinned by subscriber fees coming from cable and satellite operators. That has been the lifeblood of the sports channels.
Much more than ticket sales and advertising, yeah.
Absolutely. And as cord cutting has occurred and those fees have begun to significantly decline, you're seeing the media companies pay hugely for renewals of sports rights, but the basic revenue that they've relied on has declined. So how do we enter the realm? Well, you got sports gambling companies propping up all over the place, and all the media companies are trying to align themselves somehow with that sports gambling revenue. But we think that in part misses the boat, because what young men are doing when they're not watching sports is they're engaged in social gaming. We think that you need to have a social component to the gaming that you bring to traditional sports.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not odds against the house as a social experience, but a social one. Again, with entry fees, that can create revenues to help substitute for the subscriber fees that are lost.
That's interesting. You know, I have four teenagers, and one of them makes me nuts. I'll delay whatever game I'm watching so I don't have to watch the ads, so I can sort of time shift it, and I'll start watching a 49ers game or Giants baseball game, whatever, the Warriors. And he'll come in the room, want to watch it in real time because he'll watch 5 minutes of the game and ruin my experience and make me want to watch all the damn commercials so that he can be on Twitter or on, you know, and see what's going on in real time. Or on Snap or whatever, talking with his friends in real time, this sort of commentary and this social experience, social media experience,
exactly,
that exists at the moment of the games being played.
Exactly. And that second screen social experience is highly attractive to what used to be the key anchor demographic of sports, young men. And we think that if you provide a gaming social experience, one with entry fees, cash, you can win prizes, but it allows you to play against friends and family or fathers playing against sons. Sports television at its essence is always social. It's people talking back and forth about what's going to happen next in the game. Very different experience than betting odds against the house. And bringing that to the fore and allowing sports television to have that kind of social offering, we think will do a lot, not only to make up for sub fees, but the ratings of all sports but football are down dramatically. And we think this will help hold people to the television set, bring people back. So we're trying to make a major contribution to esports and the business model, sports and the business model, through influencer marketing, how brands can connect to these worlds with not just social gaming, but the social experience of influencers.
Lou Schwartz, the success of social media companies is usually preeminent with a single company, right? Because it is essentially a marketplace. People go to the place where people are, and that doesn't usually leave, it could be Metcalfe's Law and networking. It could be, it usually means there's one big winner. How do you pull people, users from the social media that they're already on, be that Twitter or Snapchat or whatever, and get them into your social media world?
That's a great question, Corey. The influencers have, multiple outlets. They're not singularly focused on Twitter or Instagram or TikTok, right? It's a universal sort of world, and they need to meet their audiences on a variety of different social platforms. So as you invest in the influencer to drive audience to these social gaming experiences, the expectation is that those influencers are going to go to audiences across sort of the social spectrum and maximize their exposure. So the Stream Hatchet data that we capture is capturing information and data across all the social platforms so that brands can see the impact that influencer is having 360 degrees across all the different platforms. But the influencer is not singularly focused on just one platform, right? In order to really sort of drive engagement across his or her social circle, he's got to engage universally across all those endpoints in order to instigate conversion, for these various events that we're driving.
We don't try to take anybody away from where they are. We try to bring experiences to where they already are spending their time, whether it's influencers who are, as Lou said, populating different parts of the social media world. We figure out who they're actually attracting, which brands would care most about that, bring the brand to the influencer where the influencer is and the audience already is. When it comes to gaming, we don't care if you're watching on Fox or ESPN or NBC or CBS. We have a gaming experience to bring regardless of where the viewer is. So we're agnostic as to the distribution point. We're agnostic as to the social media platform. We measure and bring differentiated experiences across all that. The issue is people recognizing that what we do is differentiated. It's unique. It's fun. It's engaging. That's what we want people to understand. We'll bring it to where they are. They don't have to come to us.
Such an interesting company, and one we'll certainly keep an eye on, because this experience, this e-gaming experience, is only just getting started. It's interesting. So as are you guys with Engine Media Holdings. Glad to have you both, Tom Rogers and Lou Schwartz. Thanks for your time. Well, coming up next on the Drill Down podcast, we will have one number that tells us a whole lot about Engine Media. That's when the Drill Down continues.
The Drill Down is brought to you by Era. With Era, give yourself an information advantage. Connect directly to earnings calls and other investor events with live transcription and event intelligence. That's Era, AIERA.com.
And you can listen to the Drill Down podcast on your favorite smart speaker, like the one sitting right behind me. I won't say its name. It's Alexa. But if I were to say that word, Alexa, and then I'd say, play the latest Drill Down podcast, you'd hear your latest show, our latest show. Just try it. It works.
And let us know what companies you think we should be drilling down on. Talk to us on Twitter and Instagram by following at Drill Down Pod and connect with us directly at our website, bizpod.net.
Now we're back with the Drill Down Bite, that one number that tells us a whole lot. That number, $7,592,387. That is how much advertising revenue, call it $7.6 million in advertising revenue, in the last 3 months for this company, for Engine Gaming and Media. What's interesting to me about that, Isaac, is that, well, they did $7.6 million in media and advertising revenues.
The direct ticket revenue, the esports revenue, the competitor fees were $2 million. So, you know, $7.6 million in advertising revenue compared to $2 million in ticket sales. I'm calling it ticket sales. They call it something else. Shows you just how much advertising is a big part of this business, a dominant, well over 75% of the business, and yet still charging players to play these games is a lot of money too. All right, that's it for the Drill Down Podcast. We appreciate your time. I'm Corey Johnson. Isaac Webster is our executive producer. Ben Wilson is our editor extraordinaire. Drill Down's a production of the Business Podcast Network.